The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, thanks for being with us one more time on the program today, Afternoons with Mike, along the Shepherd Radio Network. And on the line with me from Redding, California, oh, it's so great to have Havilah Cunnington on the line with me. Havilah is a women's pastor there in the church that most of us sing songs by, and we've heard the words Bethel music before. Well, she's right there at Bethel in Redding. Welcome to my program.
Thank you, Pastor Mike. It's good to be here.
Now, that's a name I haven't heard in a while. But, well, yeah, that's...
Is it Reverend or is it Bishop or?
No, just Mike. just Mike. That's great. But I did spend a lot of years and a number of years in ministry where some kids did call me that. And it's just, it's funny. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, you're in Florida. I didn't know how formal you were over there. So.
Oh, no, not formal at all. Yeah, this is great. And having you on the program is already, I can tell just from our chatting prior to beginning the recording for this program, you have a heart for God. And in addition to that, you're one of those people that you're like to laugh. I'm just going to say it that way. Humor is a part of your life.
I think humor makes everybody feel like they're human, you know, so when we can have humor and just get each other to laugh, I find that everyone just feels like they're real person, and they can relax and their defenses go down. And because I preach and I'm a preacher, I find that humor is kind of the sweet that makes the pill go down a little softer.
Yes, it does. And it makes people relate, and they really, it warms, I think, the heart up. You know, a merry heart does good like medicine, the scripture says. And so
when you
use humor in that way, that is such an advantage, I know. And you're also, it's got to be a little strange today. You're the subject of an interview, but oftentimes on your own podcast, you're on the kind of the quotas. So to speak, the other side of the mic.
Yes.
And here it is. And so I thank you for being on my program. But tell me a little bit about you. Were you always from California?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually am born and raised in California. I was born in a place called South Lake Tahoe, which is a mountain ski town in the mountains over in Northern California. And then I went to high school in LA, and then came back up when I was 19 years old. My dad started a church in Roseville, California, which is by the Sacramento area, and we were there for 19 years. I met my husband there and had our four kids, which I can tell you about a little bit, but I have four sons, and we actually had four kids in 5 years, but we ended up moving after my last son was born about 3 months in, and we moved up to Redding to be a part of Bethel Church. And we've been here for almost 10 years. I don't know how time speeds up like that, but it's been 10 years and it's amazing.
Oh, it is amazing to realize 10 years of your life and you turn around. And when we look at even now, of course, this last year, I think you would agree with this, since COVID, that 1 year has been 10 years, right? I mean, it feels like it has been.
It's so true. You know, I think when we're all together and there's no busyness and running around and there's nowhere to go, it definitely slowed it down. And I, you know, of course, the pandemic was tragic for many people, losing people and just a lot of the chaos that happened in our world. But I would say the silver lining was that it was really time to fall in love with our families again, fall in love with our cities and even our churches that we weren't able to go and visit. It really, you know, the Bible, I don't think the Bible says it, but they say absence makes the heart grow fonder. It's something about being away from it made us go, you know what? I appreciate it. I every time I go to brunch or I get to go to the movies or get to go visit family. It feels so much sweeter after all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is. And then I also learned very clearly that I don't love my kids enough to be around them 24 hours a day. That was very evident. I thought, you know what? I love you guys like 8 hours a day. I could be a phenomenal mom about 8 hours a day, but 24 hours a day apparently is when I just become a really bad mom.
Well,
and so that was my limit. Yeah.
I think that's funny.
The boys for 10 weeks. 10 weeks of homeschooling, and I said, Lord, I pray that you will heal them from whatever happened during those 10 weeks.
Now, see, my wife and I, we were homeschoolers, so we loved that. But in the beginning, I get it. I know what you're talking about. And there were a lot of people thrust into homeschooling that really had, A, no desire to, and B, maybe not enough patience to do. But boy,
yes.
That's something that I think it's funny, but I know your kids wouldn't feel that way about 8 hours is the limit with mom.
I know. I had the privilege of getting homeschooled a couple of years in my schooling, and I agree. I did not look at it as negative. I loved it, but as a parent, it's no joke. So clearly you were married to an angel. And that was very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. I can't deny that one. But I think that it's not for everybody, but it is a good thing. And, well, I'm really glad to know that things are at least looking a little bit better. And there's a lot of areas that we are kind of getting better. And you mentioned something that I think few people really ever realize, that there have been some silver linings that did come from COVID. It wasn't all bad. I mean, the losing people, it couldn't be any worse than that. And seeing the people who have suffered sickness, I had COVID myself, was not a fun experience. But, you know, this thing about causing people to slow down and look around and maybe reevaluate things like family, things like time together and how we approach life. I think that was a silver lining. And a lot of church outreach with streaming, that's grown a lot too. And so many more people are hearing the gospel.
Exactly. I have a couple of friends that their church exploded during it because they were able to reach, they had the biggest Easter Sunday they've ever had. And it was because of their online service. They were able to reach people and it became a viable way to get the message out and to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you and I both know there is no substitute for being in church and being with the people that we love and connecting and, you know, being able to help each other. But there was something about making our faith not just a Sunday morning, but that we could actually access it anywhere and from anywhere. It was just really powerful. And so I learned a lot of things during it. It's also been interesting. I get to travel for a living and just witnessing really how the churches have navigated this. I have to say, first of all, any pastor or leader that's listening to this show, you know, bravo, you guys did incredible. I cannot imagine what it was like to steer the ship in the middle of the storm of a lifetime. And just navigating your staff and your teams and even employers that are listening to this and moms and dads, all of us, it was an incredibly difficult and treacherous water, and we made it. And I think there's something I think very spiritual and prophetic and important that we actually take a minute and we take a deep breath and we celebrate that we made it. We did it. We are not the same people. Our churches are not the same places. Our marriages are not the same. But one thing I know is that we have all had a dose of courage that we did not have, because you can't have courage through information. You have to have it through experience. And so since we walked through this, we are more courageous. We're more resilient. We are more empathetic. We are less selfish. We care about other people in a different way. So yeah, there's been a lot. And even in my own life, it really had me turn around and evaluate what's important to me. I think that's why a lot of people moved home or they moved to different places in the state. People just were able to rearrange and choose how they wanted to live the next decade. And that's pretty supernatural and such a gift.
Well, with that, there's been a lot of people because of all the things that have happened in your state. I mean, just being real, a lot of the news stories have not painted being in California as being the easiest thing right now or the easiest place. And I'm living in one of what is considered to be the free states. And really, a lot of people are moving to Florida, moving to Texas, moving out of places like California or New York. What has it been like in the last couple of months? Is it are there any signs of it getting better there?
It's a great question, Mike. You know, California is a big state. And oftentimes, you know, people think of, it's like Florida, obviously. Oh, it's just Orlando. And you're like, no, there's actually more to the state. And so Northern California and Southern California are like two different places. They're like two different states. And so because we're in Northern California, it's very, you know, I would say low-key, conservative, very, and we've been open. Our kids are actually in a school where they don't have to have masks right now. And there's some real freedoms where we are at this point. But I would say my friends that are living in Southern California, it is still terrible. It's still terrible and devastating. And I mean, there are a lot of people that aren't able to do their normal life at all. So there's definitely a dichotomy between Northern and Southern California. Our church is open, but just to give our listeners context, our church was closed for over a year. Like, we never walked in the building for over a year.
My.
And our church is, well, at this point was 12,000 people. You can imagine in a city of 100,000, and we have a church of 12,000, that's difficult. It's also difficult because church isn't a social club. Church is a hospital for the soul. It's something that helps us connect to God and love each other in community. And so I think we're rebuilding. We're having to sit back and go, okay, let's rebuild. Let's open the doors again. Let's tell people it's safe to come back. And there's just a lot of conflict. I would say there's definitely, I don't know if this is how it is for you, Mike, but here there's a lot of lines being drawn and people are really curious about where you stand and what you believe and what you're fighting for. And so I would say one of the things I'm really fighting for right now is just to be a bridge builder, to not let us die on mountains that we're not supposed to die on, but to actually be Jesus, hands and feet, and to be compassionate, empathetic, to believe that you might have a different perspective than somebody else, and to be humble that we could be wrong. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, very important.
The year that you went without having any public meetings, and that had to make a major impact, not only on the preaching of the word, but also what you guys are so known for in your music. How did that proceed during that time?
It was interesting. I know there was a lot of songwriting that went on. Amazingly enough, the states were open. We were allowed to get on planes, masked up, and the planes were very quiet. So, I mean, initially for me personally, I was on my way to minister in the Seattle area in the state of Washington. And I took a small flight with my 14-year-old son. And when we landed in Seattle, my phone was blowing up. And, you know, we had heard about COVID very casually that week, but nobody knew what was going to happen. And basically, I called my husband and he said, honey, you have to come home. This trip has been canceled. You need to come home. So when I got home, within 24 hours, all of my events, I think I had 17 events in the next couple months, canceled in 24 hours. And I knew this is very different. And so we were nervous, just to be honest. I think all of us were. We lost 40% of our income overnight. And so I really had to make a choice. Am I going to trust that God's going to help us and we're going to figure this out? Or am I going to not, you know, bow down to fear? And we decided that trust was the best way to go. And so we started to be creative and find ways to reach people online. And then I would say about March, we were home for April and May and June. And then in July, invitations began to open up and the world began to open up, not necessarily in California, but Texas and Florida and some of those places, Missouri. And so we would travel. And you know what? There was one specific church, I won't name them, but they were our life source. I mean, they had us three times that year and they helped us pay our bills. They helped encourage us. They gave us opportunities to get ministered to. And so the church was the church to us. because our church wasn't open. It was really amazing.
Well, that is a really beautiful story to realize how people help other ministries like yours. And I'm really glad to hear this whole thing. I don't think that perception about the difference, let's say, in Northern and Southern California is really understood nationally speaking, because I think we just hear the term California and we would think of all of the issues that maybe L.A. and San Diego and some of those, maybe San Francisco would be facing. But in Northern California, it's not as severe. And
no, it's a little pocket. It's like Orange County in L.A. Orange County is a little pocket of conservative, Republican, very, you know, it's in the middle of Southern California. But yeah, there's little pockets. And because it's a large area. And so, yeah, of course, we have a good mix, a diverse group here. And I will say, even with COVID, a lot of people were moving out of the East Bay, which is the San Francisco area, as well as LA, and they came up and purchased homes and are living up here. So we've had a unique diversity that's happened in our environment as well. I don't know how that's all going to look, even for those that are listening that might be in the Tennessee, Nashville area. I know Colorado, Texas, a lot of people have left California, and I'm sure you guys are wondering what that's going to look like for you as a state, because they go and they're your voters and they're the ones that get to decide. And so I think we're going to have to really, I think we're going to see things are very redefined. But yeah, it's very interesting. I definitely don't feel like we are, you know, nobody knows about us anymore. I think being in California and everything that's happened, there's been a lot of people that would not have known about Redding are coming our way now.
What is the outlook for those that are in Redding and your church for the future for 2022? Are you guys encouraged about further things opening up there in California?
Yes, the doors are open. We're telling people come back. We are taking every precaution. And, you know, it's exciting. I think obviously there's been a portion of people that have moved on. You know, it was time for them to move. They either went back to family or they decided California wasn't for them. But in the same way, those of us that have decided to stay, there's a new resolve to believe for California. And, you know, we don't want everybody leaving. We need to be evangelists. We want to reach people, help people. And so there's a little bit more of a buy-in, maybe, because it's been more difficult to be here. And doors are open. We're hosting events. We are making sure we're helping people that are in need, with service communities. We still have our Supernatural School of Ministry that's open, and you can either attend online or in person. And so that has thousands of students. And so we're going to keep going. I think 2022 is going to be a really critical year because we're going to get to go and do what we felt called to do all along. But now we get to actually redefine it, take a step back, ask ourselves, is this really what we want to do? And when you're in a mega church, which I know with your history ministry, you understand this, it's a conveyor belt. You know, you get that many people. We have 850 employees. So you can imagine it's a huge ship, but it's a privilege to pull back and say, okay, now what? Now what do we want? One of the things that happened in my own life, Mike, was I accepted a position to be the women's pastor at our church, Bethel. So Bethel Church is now, it's always been my home church. I love that church. I've been there for 9 years, but now I'm here to help the women and to pastor them. So again, that would have never happened if I hadn't have gone through the last 2 years.
It's funny, how God will use sometimes even the most difficult of circumstances. And out of that, we see clearly his will, a light to our feet, not a spotlight always, a lamp, as it is as we're walking along. My guest today is Howla Cunnington, and we'll be back with her. She's a pastor to women at the Bethel Church in Redding, California. What a wonderful ministry that they are giving the world right now through music and other areas as well. We'll be back with Howla coming up. This is Afternoons with Mike. You're on The Shepherd. On the line with me is Howla Cunnington from Redding, California, the Bethel Church. We've heard lots about this ministry over the years, and I think many of the churches in Central Florida would not only be familiar with some of the songs, the great worship songs that have come through these doors, But, you know, you're much more than just a source of music. There's a vibrant church going on there with, you mentioned, 800 pastors in that ministry. Yeah, that's kind of a staff number that most of us can't even get our brain around to even imagine what that would be like. But you guys are in an area where your church is like, you have like a tenth of the population or more than a tenth of the population attending your fellowship.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And again, it's so sovereign. I found Bethel when I was a young woman. I was 19 years old. And a little bit of my story is that I was raised in a minister's home. And I actually never saw myself in ministry, never saw myself as a pastor. It really came down to me dealing with a lot of insecurity and hatred towards myself. And the reason I really dealt with that was really the foundation of it happened when I was in third grade. I was in a small little mountain town school. And one day my teacher came in and said, Havilah, we have someone here who wants to give you a couple tests. So they took me into the back room at the school office. And as they were testing me, of course, did not know who the person was or what exactly they were doing. I went home that night and my parents sat me down and said, Havilah, the person who came today was giving you tests about learning. And we learned today that you have learning disabilities. You have reading and comprehension struggles. You're dyslexic. And school is going to be a struggle for you. We're going to help you, but this is the best that we could do. And so I, of course, in my third grade little brain, it didn't matter to me. But as I got older in junior high and high school, I started to really see the deficit in my life. I could not read out loud in high school. You could not read my handwriting. I couldn't spell. I was just very illiterate in many ways. And when God got a hold of my heart, and I was 17, I was hiding at school, I was hiding at church. One night, some guys had picked my twin sister and I up to go to a party. And we got into the back seat of this car. We think we're just going to a party. And all of a sudden, I hear the voice of God, not audibly, but I hear it in my heart, just clear as day. And he says, Havilah, what are you doing? You need to get out of here. And I felt such a move, such a tangible presence. I told the guys in the front to turn the music down. And I blurted out, I have a call of God on my life, which was incredibly awkward. There was no beautiful worship music or a pastor. And then I was so filled with this clarity. I said to them, I'm going to serve God. You're welcome to come with me if you want, but this is what I'm going to do. And now I'm crying in the backseat of this car. I look over at my twin sister. She's crying as well. And we're both having this kind of supernatural experience. And so we looked up the window, and it still makes me laugh to this day because they took us home. They never even talked to us. They never said a word. They just took us home. And I got out of my car that night, and I knelt down by my bed, and I said these words out loud. God, I'm not much. I'm young. I'm 17. I'm a girl, and I have no special gifts or graces. In fact, I feel like I don't really have anything to offer you. But if you can use anyone, you can use me. And I'll tell you what, Mike, that was the defining moment in my life. I did not know that. There were no angels. There was no, you know, heavenly choir. I just knew that I wasn't going to live in two worlds. I was going to live with the truth of what God said about me and believe that what he said was true. And that changed my life. So that's kind of a long way of talking about it. But about 19, I began to speak at about 18 years old, my twin sister and I would travel up and down the California coast in our little red and white convertible, and we would clean houses on the weekdays, and then we would use that money to pay for our fuel, and we'd go to youth groups and places and minister and preach and pray and prophesy. And one of those trips led us to a little church in Redding, California called Bethel Church, and they were having a supernatural move, but not everybody liked it. And at that, I had no idea at this moment, but that year alone, they had 1,000 people walk out, and they were now down to 800, a Gideon's army, a small number of people. Mm-hmm. Bill Johnson and his wife were here. Chris Ballatin, who ended up being our associate pastor and the founder of the School of Supernatural, he was still working as a mechanic in Weaverville, but God knew. And so when I look at Bethel now, and if you guys don't know, you can look at the top of the charts on K-Love or Air One. Our music is everywhere, and we are award-winning. It's incredible, but I know it came from a little place that really was after the authentic reality of God and his presence, that he would find a place to come and stay. And it's been pretty supernatural. Mm. That was a long answer, but that's what that's what it was.
And you said you met your husband in the area out there at this point, and you've got four kids now. What are they?
I have four kids.
Yeah. What is that like, having four sons in a day like today?
It's terrible. No, you know, I always say I did not get married until I was 27. And I remember at one point the Lord asked, I said, Lord, would you want me to get married? Is this what we're doing? And he said, well, I want you to think about your life at the end of your life. Who do you want around your kitchen table? And I knew I would like a husband and kids. And he said, so you're going to have to slow down, because no man is going to run after you and compete with God. And so I slowed down enough, met my husband. He was in a ministry place called IHOP, International House of Prayer. He was living in Kansas City.
Oh yeah. With Mike Bickle, right?
With Mike Bickle. Exactly.
Yeah.
So he came out as a musician. My husband's a drummer and a piano player. And he came out, and I was the worship pastor at that point. And it was, it started as friendship and built to a relationship, and we were married a year and a half later, and then pregnant 3 months later, and then pregnant 9 months later, and then pregnant 17 months later, and then pregnant 9 months later. And then we, my tubes were cut tight and burned. And so we are not having any more children.
That's funny.
We don't
hug,
we don't kiss, we don't go in jacuzzis, we keep it clean. And so, so our boys are now, we had them at 4 and 5 years. So our eldest is 15 and our youngest is 9. And I'll tell you what, Mike, it is crazy. Four boys is no joke. It is not for the faint at heart.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. I think all parents would feel that way to a degree. But a lot of parents would go like, wow, not worthy. Bow down. This lady's got four sons and in the year 2021. So we know that a lot of prayer is guaranteed in your home, I'm sure. And that's wonderful. I loved kids. To me, one of the greatest things that ever happened in my life was getting the job description, as it were, of dad.
Yeah.
And I have loved that. I am so thankful, grateful to God that he allowed that to happen. And I know that those boys, that without a doubt, they love their mom.
They do. And you know, now I'm at the stage, we have taken them all over the world. It's been a very high priority for me to have my kids with me while I minister. And having grown up in ministry, I saw ministry orphans and ministry widows, meaning that the parent or the spouse really just gave it all to the ministry and really abandoned their children and their spouse. And so when the Lord called me into ministry, I just said, God, I'm not going to go without my kids and my husband. Like, I'm not going to go happen somewhere else if you can't help me, help them be with me. And so we've sacrificed a lot, but they've been all over the world and gone on tour. And I go from preaching to thousands of people to changing diapers and getting up in the middle of the night if someone's throwing up and cuddling them. And I agree with you. Being a mom has been the absolute most rewarding experience in my whole life. And I would say it feels the most eternal. It feels like it has the most value of anything else I'm doing, because I get to steward an eternal soul. So it's pretty cool.
All parents are dealing with this issue of social media. How do you guys, you and your husband, how do you navigate that whole process with your kids?
Yeah, it is very tricky, isn't it? And I don't know if it's because we have the four boys, but none of my kids have social media, which is kind of shocking to have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old and even almost 11-year-old. And we didn't do it intentionally, meaning we didn't say if they asked us, can we? I mean, of course, we would have said no, but it's not a high priority for us. We keep our kids busy. And now, do they like video games? Absolutely. Do they like to be on their Switch or their Nintendo? Yes. So I don't think my kids are different than anybody else's. But at this point, we've just really kept them. I don't think that Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat is a place for young for children. I just don't. And as long as they are not adults, they're still children. So I think practicing with it when they get a little older, but I know enough adults that have lost their mind on socials to give it to a child who their brain isn't even formed yet. I just think we have to be cautious. So my kids can get on my Instagram and check out their friends' Instagrams, and they can get on my Facebook and go check out their friends. It's not that they're not allowed on it. I just would never let them have an account without me having access to it.
So you're able to monitor what they do much easier that way.
Yeah. And it's really intense out there because there are apps that hide apps. I mean, you have to be pretty tech savvy. And so there's a few things that we really recommended. And one of them is Disney Circle. It's a program that you can buy for your home, and you put every device on it and it alerts you. It blocks inappropriate, dangerous things for our children. And then there's another, I can't think of it at this second, but there's another one that my husband just installed that just alerts you for things that get might be in question. So you can go through it and check. And I'll just say this, I might sound really strong, but I'm a 44-year-old mom, so forgive me. And I'm Italian, so I'm a little intense. Nobody should have access to media in your home as any children without you having access to it. It is the most dangerous, perverted, hostile environment. And so we have to look at it as if you have a loaded weapon in your home. And so, yes, can you have a weapon? Yes. How do you take care of it? You lock it up. You know the rules. You protect. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think of it. Even for my husband and I, my husband has all my passwords. I have all his passwords. We have codes on our TV for shows. We don't just let you flip through channels. There's codes that anything in a mature setting, you can't just click on. And so we just really, I think part of our mandate as parents is to protect and nurture, and they don't need to think about protecting themselves right now. They want to be children. They want to be relaxed. They shouldn't be thinking, am I going to see pornography when I turn the channel, or am I going to have access to something I'm Googling and then all of a sudden I'm seeing more than I knew I was Googling? So we try to make it easy for them to be kids and not even have to worry about it, so that they can live their best life.
And when you compare what a lot of kids are doing in this generation to previous generations, kids, and when I was a young guy, we were outside doing things like sports and riding bikes.
Yes.
And it really is this virtual world that they're growing up with. And if they are immersed in it, it's a scary place, isn't it?
It is. And I feel bad. I will say there is some good news in it. And that is the generation that's coming up, which is my children, not my generation, but the children below us, are actually less obsessed with it and are way more aware of the dangers. Mm-hmm. So we were a generation that didn't know, my parents were a generation that didn't know smoking was dangerous. And then they were clearly had to deal with addictions and the vulnerability of not knowing. And then now in my generation, we just know. So yeah, you might be a smoker, but you're very much aware of the danger that can have on your body. I think it's the same with media. Our generation didn't know how to navigate it. We had never been here. We didn't know what would happen. And so our kids are now a lot more aware, and there is actually a more of a sobriety about it than we may think. So that's exciting. That's what stats are showing us.
What are the people, the women that you minister to there in Reading, what are they, how was their reception to this strong position, which I think you've taken a wonderfully wonderful position, but it is a strong position from a lot of people's perspectives. What would their reception be to that?
I'll say this, first of all, I don't tell people what to do. They get to decide what they want to do, and they get to live powerful lives. So I am very clear that I am not responsible for anyone's attitudes, choices, or feelings. That is with them, and they will get to stand before God for that. And it's not my right, really, to sit and judge their choices. If heaven isn't at stake, it's not my business. It's up to them how they want to live their life. So what I try to do is not preach, but I try to let my life teach. So you wouldn't hear me go around and preaching this and teaching this and somehow on the sound waves. But what I will say is for our home, this is what's worked. And then I hope to give them information. Most people want to do the right thing if they know what's best for them. Mm-hmm. So if you tell them, don't eat this, this is bad, this will give you cancer, and this won't, most every normal person is going to say, well, then give me the fruit, because if that doesn't give me cancer, I'm not going to eat it. So I think instead of mandating things without information, if you give people information, you know, the average kid today is going to see pornography at 5 years old on any device that you have. Most kids are exposed to it by a family member or in their own home. It's not something that's done at school. And so if you actually do the work, instead of maybe judging what I'm saying as you're listening to this, then you do the work and prove me wrong. Go out there, you read the stats, you see what's out there, because, and for some of us, we feel powerless. And I understand that. It's scary. I don't have it all together. I can't mandate how my boys are going to live as adults. But I do hope to present them with good and bad and life and death, and then they will get to choose how they want to do it. And I'll tell you what, am I still paying the bill in the house? Yes. Am I still paying for their phone? Yes. So that means it's still mine. I get to steward that. And so we got to be really clear. I want them, you know, here's the thing. I'm going to be their best friend, meaning their life is wonderful when they're with me. I feed them. I nurture them. I love them. If their life, if their choices remove them from me, then their life's going to get a lot harder, not because I'm making it hard for them, but I want to be the softest place for them to land in the world. I want them to feel protected and loved. And so instead of me mandating what they need to do, I'm really honest with them, super honest. And then I just ask them, you know, what do you think? And we have really important conversations. It's not a rule-based thought, it's a conversation. And most often they will come to the same conclusion. They will say, you know, Mom, it's true. Or what if I just didn't do that right now? Okay, yeah, I think that's a good choice. Mm-hmm. So keeping that line of communication is really open. And if you have a spouse that doesn't believe that that's what you should be doing and you do, remember, it takes two yeses in a marriage to be a yes. And so there's a lot of our parenting that we have to trust God. Lord, I can't control everything. I can't control what they do at school. I can't control what they say with their friends. I can't control. So I still have an aspect of trust that I can't fake. I have to trust God. God protect them when I cannot.
That's wise.
But I can steward my home.
That's right.
And, you know, I can't be a hypocrite. And I think for many Christians, and specifically parents, we're hypocritical. We'll tell our kids, don't say this, but we say it when we're angry, or don't watch this, but they can see our Netflix reading, our Netflix preview. So again,
you've hit something there. Havel, I'm going to interrupt just for a second. You've hit something there I want to cover. We're up against a break right now, but let's pick that up, the whole thing of parents, in a moment when we get back. My guest today, Havel Cunnington. I'll be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today is Havel Cunnington from Bethel in Redding, California. She is a full-time minister there, a minister to the women of that church, a world-renowned church, I might add. And we were talking at the end of the second segment, this last segment, about parents and about parenting. And you made a statement that I just could not agree with more. I think it's right on. A lot of kids... You know, there's an old saying that I heard years ago, probably before you were born, that a lot more is caught than taught. And our parents really need to hear that in this generation. Our kids are watching. They're much more alert to what we're watching than they realize. And you made the mention about it being important that parents not be hypocrites. So pick up on that.
Yes. Well, you know, I'll say it this way. I was raised in a minister's home where my parents had very strong convictions and standards. And I was raised around other kids that were in ministry, PK. And many of them, in fact, most of them did not serve God. And somebody once asked me, why did you serve God? And why did you believe, you know, that your parents' faith, what was different? And I said, because my parents weren't ministers, they were following Jesus, and I watched them do it, and so I knew it was authentic. And when my parents were wrong, they always asked forgiveness. And when my parents, they never propped themselves up or acted like I was crazy or acted like I didn't know what I was talking about. They would, if they got angry, they would come back and say, I'm so sorry, mom, I got too angry. If they made a rule that was too strict, they would say, you know what, we reevaluated it, let's change this. And so they were willing. It wasn't set in stone and fear-based. It was really about learning and growing together. So I would say, when I talk about parents being hypocrites, what I want to say, even to myself, because I'm not preaching at you, I'm with you in the trenches of parenting. Mm-hmm. I want to, first of all, be honest with myself. Because there's a part of it where, you know, we go, I want to get healthy. Okay, you want to get healthy. Well, what did you eat? Well, I don't know. Did you exercise? Not for a while. And all of a sudden, we're saying we actually eat healthy, but if you actually log in your food, you probably weren't eating healthy, or you realize, gosh, I didn't eat as healthy as I thought. It's the same with us. Instead of looking at our kids and going, I want them to mimic an idea of faith and Christianity, I actually want to come in and log my own experience and life and make sure that what I'm saying is I'm being authentic. And once we get clear on our authenticity as parents, then we can go in and we can't make every wrong right, but we can at least take responsibility and ask our kids in courage to forgive us for not knowing, or doing it because we didn't know, or doing it because we knew, but we were doing it out of fear or shame or mm-hmm. control. And so once we figure that out, to me, the Bible says a soft answer turns away wrath. I think when we take ownership, everybody respects a leader who asks forgiveness. Everybody. It's the opposite thing. You kind of think, oh, we're not going to respect them because now we know they're flawed. It's just not true. When somebody owns it, everybody goes, oh, you're human. Okay, yeah. And everybody starts rooting for you. So even with our kids, listen, parenting is crazy. I get it. It's a crazy world out there. And Craig Rochelle once said this great phrase that I have used 1,000 times. I wish I had said it myself. But he said, many things in life are not problems to solve, but tensions to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think with parenting. When we look at parenting as problems to solve, we do it wrong. It's a tension to manage. Today, I'm managing media use. Tomorrow, I'm managing sugar. The next day, I might be managing fun or play. So again, we're just stewarding that we're not just checking boxes. We have to be able to have this livable, you know, live, breathable relationship with ourselves, with God, and with each other.
You know, and I think a beautiful thing with that, Havilah, is from what you're saying, you've learned this. You can't do all of the boxes at one time. You can't address every yeah. single issue. Our kids would just feel like they're just kind of in a war zone all the time, where it's just like one bullet zinging after another. We have to choose our battles. We have to really yeah. work on one aspect, and it's so much better to deal with the character issues. But before we can do that, I read a book years ago by Richard Fugate, and it was called What the Bible Says About Child Training. And he said, before you can ever deal with the rebellion in your child's heart, the parent has to deal with it in their heart. And I could not agree more with that. I think that is right on, and it is on point. And this whole thing that you've mentioned is just, it's so true. Parents need to be real. If they goof up, ask for forgiveness. I think they yeah. might, instead of being afraid of looking weak, they might be yeah. surprised at how real they look.
That's right. And even for your, you know, even for men, I think men sometimes think that a man can't be sorry or can't show emotion or that lacks masculinity. And I'll tell you what, it is so powerful when a man can say, you know, they're going to do it differently than a woman. I've learned that. I grew up in a female home. So I have a twin sister and a mom and a full Italian dad who's almost a girl. And so I had a very female experience. And then I now live with 5 men. And there's definitely a distinct difference and how men and women communicate and what is important to us and how life works. But there is a way where we can both, if you're a wife and you're listening to this and you're thinking my husband needs to, or my boyfriend needs to, I would just caution you, they're not going to be you in female form. They're going to be who God called them to be. And the most important thing is that you show up and you do you instead of monitoring what he's doing.
That's good. Good wisdom, Havilah Cunnington, my guest today from Bethel. You have a podcast. Share a little bit about it.
Yeah, my podcast is called Home with Havilah. Home with Havilah. That's H-A-V-A as in Victor, I-L-A-H. And it's actually, we try to upload twice a week. So on it's on iTunes. It's really anywhere podcasts are found. And usually Wednesdays, we do a podcast that's more an interview or academic. And then on Fridays, I have a Cunnington kind of family, just, you know, catch up with the Cunningtons kind of podcast that gives you a chance to have a conversation with me about everyday life and my everyday life. So yeah, that's on there. And then also I have a ministry called Truth to Table, like farm to fork, Truth to Table. And that is where we host Bible studies live or online at my kitchen table. And we actually, this year, starting 2022, January 1st, I'm hosting a Bible study called Discovering and Activating My Spiritual Gifts. That's Discovering and Activating My Spiritual Gifts. It's a 15-day Bible study to help you identify and understand your unique spiritual gifts. That's completely free. It's for anybody who wants to join. I do have a book that goes with it if you want to get that to enhance your study. But there's last year, I did a book called I Do Boundaries. And every year we take about 25,000 people through these studies. So if you're listening to this, this is a perfect way to jump into the new year, have a Bible study. If you have a somebody in your life, whether it's a daughter or a daughter-in-law or a child who's not super, you know, their faith is maybe a little bit less important to them, or maybe you're not sure where to start, you guys can do this together. We have people that do it all over the world. They have friends, best friends that do it, and then they Marco Polo each other every day to talk about what they got out of it. And we also have small groups that gather together. And so it's 15 days. Anybody can do anything for 15 days. And the goal is to get you started in your walk of faith and to strengthen. And then I also have a Truth Academy, which is an online academy if you want a little bit more. And then lastly, I also have crash courses that I've created for communicators. It's called A Crash Course to Communication. And I have one on writing a book. I have one on preparing a message. I have one on delivering a message. And I have one on going live on your socials. So those are a little bit more of an investment, but they are 10 sessions on how to write a book, how to preach a message, and how to go live. And you can find that at theinfluencertable.com, theinfluencertable.com.
Now, you mentioned that you've written at least one book. How many books do you have?
I just finished my 9th book.
Wow. Wow.
I know. And you know, we our first part segment, I am learning. I mean, I barely finished high school. So it is the miraculous work of God that I have had that privilege of doing. And it's still difficult for me. It's not something that I just whip out the next book. It's always a labor of love. But I'll tell you what, God can do anything. And I'm a testimony of that.
Well, you are using the gifts that he has given you to use, and I really appreciate that. You know, this thing that you've mentioned about finding your spiritual gift, that's come up in my program in the last couple of weeks by another guest that I had on. That really is an important need, isn't it, for people to really know what it is that God has planted in their own life, what gifts the Holy Spirit has given them.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I really asked the Lord, Lord, what kind of book do I write? I wrote a book 2 years ago, a Bible study called I Do Hard Things, which was breaking free of fear and pain. And then I did the next year was called I Do Boundaries, which was, you know, to find your power and protect what matters. And this year I'm like, okay, Lord, we've dealt with the pain and the fear and the anxiety. We've dealt with boundaries and relationships. What next? And I felt the Holy Spirit say, you need to empower them to know that the gifts of the Holy Spirit are within them. And so I just dove deep and I realized, you know what? I don't even, as a believer and ordained minister for many, you know, 20 years, I've been in ministry for 25 years. There were things I wasn't clear. And I think the church has definitely been under attack. And I think specifically with our doors being closed, we need all hands on deck. We need you in the army of God and we need you activated. And so what I first want to do with the study is everyone gets to take a test and figure out what's that unique gift on your life. And then we're going to show you what it is and then how to activate it. Because it's just because you have the gift of wisdom or the gift of knowledge or the gift of healing doesn't mean that it just automatically operates. It's a gift of grace that you have to actually access. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to teach you how to do that. And guess what? Gifts of the Spirit are not given to mature Christians. They're given to every Christian. And so it's very important to know which one you have.
And you know, you're right. You mentioned earlier a couple of times in a couple of different ways about the issue of stewardship. And that is something that, because every person, every believer has been given gifts, Scripture says the Holy Spirit gives them severally as He will. And it is a matter of stewardship to really respond to what He's doing, recognize what He's given, and then act upon it. And that is tremendous. Havilah, give us your website, how people can find out all of the, either the podcasts or maybe more about your programs, your books. How can they find you?
You know what? You can either go to my full name, which is Havilah Cunnington, H-A-V as in Victor, I-L-A-H, and it's Cunnington. Not Cunningham, just so when you go to Google it, .com, and you can find my travel schedule and podcasts and all the things. And then for our nonprofit ministry, it's called truthtotable.com, like farm to fork, truth to table. If you get to any one of those websites, you will find us. I'm on socials. I'm everywhere. So once you get going and you start looking for me, you should be able to find me pretty fast.
What's on your calendar for the coming months here? What's the most exciting thing besides, obviously, Christmas for us all? But what are you looking forward to doing?
I'm super excited. Next Monday, I fly down to L.A. I'm on a show called Better Together, which is hosted by TBN. And so I'm pretty excited. I think Christine Kane is a guest and Lori Crouch. There's a couple, Crystal Hurst, so some really phenomenal women. And we actually film a week's worth of shows on Tuesday. And so I love being with other women that are in the trenches and are warriors as well. And then to be honest, I'm a Christmas fanatic. So I have seven trees in my house. I mean, I'm that person. So we start an Advent. And I'm the type of mom that has a gift, you know, every day. And I'm all in. I'm over the top. And my husband, he manages and deals with it. So, and he loves it. He says he loves it, but you know.
Well, we wish you the very merriest of Christmases this year. And thank you for spending this time, not only with me on the phone, but with all of our listeners and sharing from the deposit that God has given you in your heart. Thank you so much, Havilah.
Mike, thank you for having me. It's been an honor, and I hope we get to do this again.
Havilah Cunnington from Bethel Ministries in Redding, California. And friends, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on the Shepherd Radio Network on Afternoons with Mike.